Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 11th, 2019, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our weekly Lunch and Learn. I'm handing out a source sheet. I don't know if I have enough. Please share, if possible.
You want to share with me?
Yeah.
Just asking.
Yeah. And we are in Parshat Vayishlach, and we are in Perek Lamed Gimel.
This is Vayishlach. He did.
Lamed Gimel. We are on page 34. I'm sorry, chapter 34, which is on page Lamed Dalid, Perek Lamed Dalid, page 180.
See?
Okay. Don't tell you anything.
180, Parshat Vayishlach. Okay. So we are going to be discussing aspects of the episode with Dina, the episode of Dina. And we're not going to read the entire story. It's 30 sukim more, but just briefly, the beginning of the story on page 180. Vatetzei Dina bat Leah she yalda li Yaakov lirot bivnota aretz vayar ota Shechem ben Chamor hachivi nisi haaretz vayikach ota vayishkav ota vayianeha. Dina, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to look over the daughters of the land. Shechem, the son of Chamor, the Chivite, the prince of the region, saw her, took her, lay with her, and violated her. He raped her. That's the way the Torah describes this episode with Dina. And then, after that happens, Dina's brothers are upset, and make a plan. They learn of what's going on, and so remember they say to Chamor, Shechem's father, if you want her and if you want our daughters to marry your sons, you also have to go. Everyone has to be circumcised, right? And then we'll be able to marry each other, and that is on pasuk Yud Gimel, on page 183. Vayanu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem v'et Chamor aviv b'mirma v'yedaberu asher timei et Dina achotam v'yomer alehem lo nuchal lasot davar hazel atet et achotenu le'ish asher lo orla ki cherpa hulanu. We can't give him to uncircumcised person. Only on the condition will we acquiesce to you if you become like us by letting every male among you become circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you. V'natnu et benotenu lachem v'et benotechem nitach lanu. We will give our daughters to you and take your daughters to ourselves. V'yashavnu itchem v'hayinu la'am echad. We will be one nation. It's important to note here that if you go back to Pasuk Hey, verse 5 on the previous page, to see who is involved in this conversation. So he comes and says, I want to marry her. And then it says in Pasuk 5, V'yakov shamaki timet dinabito uvanav hayu et miknehu basadev echarish Yaakov ad boam. So Yaakov hears about this. He doesn't say anything until the sons come back. ויצא חמור אבי שכם אל יעקב לדבר איתו, ובני יעקב באו מן השדה כשמם, והתעצבו האנשים ואיחר להם מאוד. So it sounds like everybody's there at this point. Shechem, Chamor, Yaakov, and his sons. They're all engaged in this conversation.
I did not see Shechem is here. Chamor.
I'm sorry. Chamor is there. Correct. You're right. Thank you. Chamor is there, and Yaakov is there. Could be unclear, but Yaakov and his sons are there, and then they go. They tell him this whole thing that we'll marry you, as long as you're circumcised. But then we know what happens. They agree, right? The people agree to this, or at least Hamor and Shechem agree to this, and they go and tell all of their family, all of their subjects, what they have to do. And so what happens? Now we're on Pasuk Chaf Hei on page 184, Pasuk 25. Vayhi vayom hashlishi biyotam ko'avim vayikru shnei b'nei Yaakov Shimon v'Levi achei dina ish charbo vayavo el ha'ir b'tevach vayahargu kol zachar. On the third day, when they were in pain, Yaakov's two sons, Shimon and Levi, Dina's brother, the Torah, right, emphasizes. We know they're Dina's brother, but the Torah emphasizes that they are Dina's brothers to sort of indicate that this is animated by a sense of, you know, family pride.
Family honor.
Okay, and they go in and they kill every male. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, they killed at the point of sword. Then they took Dina from Shechem's house and left. That's really what we're going to discuss. A lot of questions. What's one of your questions, Shula?
Is that...
Why they mention how different they kill?
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't going to talk about that, right? How they kill everyone else versus how they kill these two people. It specifically says by sword. I'm not sure. Good question.
My question is totally different. If they already told them, we'll overlook that after you do the circumcision.
Right. Yeah.
So what is happening here? Is that a breach of a contract?
Okay. So the first thing is, how do we make of this deception?
Because there are two items here, actually. One is the family honor or the vengeance.
Right.
And the other one is keeping your contract or your word.
Right.
Like they're lying.
So
okay.
What is going on?
Right. Okay, that's a good question. Any other questions?
Her reputation herself. If she marries, so her honor is, she gains back her honor.
Oh, interesting.
For the rest of her life.
Interesting, okay. Although the brothers certainly didn't see it, at least Shimon and Levi didn't see it that way, right? Any other questions?
Questions is, why would they deceive these people?
Okay, question about the deception, yes. Yep. Where does Yaakov fit into this whole thing? Right? Meaning, how much of this deception was Yaakov aware of? Did Yaakov condone this whole trick that they were going to make them get circumcised so that they would be compromised and they'd be able to be killed? That's one question. Yeah, Shula?
Maybe there was a suggestion that it's her fault because she didn't stay at home.
Ah, very good.
She was looking for trouble.
Right, very good. So there, you're right. So that is you make a very good point. I will tell you that you are echoing Rashi. So for the sake of answering Shula's question, and it's interesting. Let's look, Shula. Let's look at Rashi. Let's look at Rashi, Shula, on page 180. Rashi says, Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk Aleph. The Rashi is in the middle of the page. The Rashi is broken up into two columns. We're on the left column of Rashi. It's below the main text. It says Rashi. And it is one, two, three, four lines from the bottom where it says Bat Leah.
Ah.
Oh.
Okay, you see that, Shula?
Yeah,
Bat Leah.
Yeah.
So here's what Rashi says. The lo bat Yaakov. The Torah doesn't say, it's not that she's not bat Yaakov, the Torah doesn't say. Why does the Torah identify her as Leah's daughter and not Yaakov's daughter?
That's also when you do Mishaberach. You say
hold on, 1 second. Let's read.
We are Jews. We
okay, but this, who said this is a Mishaberach? When you call up for the Torah, you do for the father. And you'd mishmer. So sometimes it's the father. Yeah. Sometimes it's the father. Sometimes
when
it's the mother.
You go to the Torah, but yeah. Not when you are thinking about.
Maybe. So it could be. You're right. It could be convention. It could be convention. But the Midrash doesn't leave it at that. You could be right. But the Midrash has a different view. V'lo bat Yaakov. Ella al shem yitziata nikret bat Leah. She is called the daughter of Leah based on her going out. Sha'af hi yatzanit haita. You were right. You got it, Shula. Yatzanit. She was someone who liked to go out and see... and see what was.
Say,
I don't think that it means here because there are other words for that. But she liked to go out. She was curious.
Is it because
just like Leah was curious? Yatzani taita shenemar vateitse Leah likrato. Earlier in chapter 30, if you flip back quickly to chapter 30, verse 16, which is on page 156. Vayavo Yaakov ben Hasadeh ba'erev vateitse Leah likrato. Vatomer Eli tavo kischar schartich. I mean, she wouldn't wait. We're not judging. We're just the Torah is drawing a comparison of language, which it always does. Leah was someone who Yaakov was coming home, Yaakov's not Leah's father.
No, but
Yaakov is Leah. Right. So she went to meet him. She didn't wait for him to come home. She went out. She was a yatzanit. So here too, it says Leah was a yatzanit and Dina was a yatzanit. Vateitzel lekrato. Okay. So and that's based on the midrash. Hold on one second. So you, Shula, your point is a good one. Meaning, it could be maybe, one way to read this is like you did, is that maybe the Torah is blaming her for this happening. But a more charitable way to read this is, the Torah is not blaming her, but this is why it happened, because she had
like a
curious personality, and she would leave home without the protection of some man, which may have been a good idea back in those days, right? And so this happened. But Shula, your initial read of this was sort of echoed by the Midrash.
Do you think it's because she was Leah's daughter and not Rachel's daughter? Are they because of the whole thing with the Leah with the deception?
Well, there is deception here, but not by Dina.
They're emphasizing that she was Leah's daughter.
Right, as opposed to right,
as
right,
Rachel, or as opposed to
why?
Her father.
Right, why? So this is one reason why. What's another reason why?
The reason is because Leah wasn't under deception in the first place. So maybe she wasn't just great character, and her daughter inherited the same thing.
But what's wrong with what she did here?
She went out on her own, which her mother would have done.
But what's wrong with that?
But her mother went. We're not saying
there's anything wrong with that. We're just saying she was a curious person, and she went out. Okay, so.
Not Aretz means that not but Israel.
And Leah, right? She went to see the.
She went to
meet up with other people.
Bad company.
We don't know if it's bad company. It just says Benot Aretz. We don't have to. We don't have to judge it. Okay. So we have a few questions. All of the questions we asked, including what was Yaakov's role in all this thing, and the other question is. How could the brothers do this? Meaning, on what right did they have to go kill an entire city? If we want to make an argument that they had the right to kill Shechem,
right?
Okay, we could maybe make that argument, but they killed they killed an entire city. On what right did they have to do that? The whole nation, the whole city. They killed all the males in the entire city. What right? Did they have to do that? So I want to just look at two commentaries, and we'll take a brief detour while we're doing one of them, to see different approaches to this. So the first is from the Rambam, Maimonides, who in his Laws of Milachim u'Milchamot, Kings and Wars, where he's talking about the seven Noahide laws, he brings up an interesting point about why it is that Shimon and Levi may have been in their, let's say, legal rights to kill the entire city. Okay? They are not Jews, the city. They are governed by Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And this is what, let's read the Rambam. Okay? One of the seven Noachide laws is the requirement to set up a system of justice, a Beit Din. Okay? That's one of the laws. And this is what the Rambam is talking about in this case. The Ketzad Mitzuvin Hein Al Hadinin. What must they do to fulfill the requirement regarding the laws of justice? Lo Shiv Dayanim V'Shoftim B'cho Pelech U'Pelech Ladun B'Shesh Mitzvot Elu. They have to set up a judicial system in order to adjudicate the other six laws. Okay, ulahazhir etam, and to warn the people about them. Uven Noach she'avar al achat misheva mitzvot elu. This is the key. And a Noachite, a non-Jew, who violates one of the seven commandments, yehareg b'sayef, is killed with a sword, which may explain why the Torah says they were killed with a sword. Okay? Are killed with a sword. That's the halacha. Okay? That's as the Rambam states it. Now, just as an aside, by the way, you see on the left there's an underlined English section. That English section does not appear in the Hebrew on this page because in most versions of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, it's not there. But it is in many, many manuscript versions. And so if you turn to page 2 for a second, I'll just show you something interesting. On the top of page 2, there is a clip of the missing halacha that I have in English for you on the first page. This is the Hebrew version of that missing halacha. And then on the bottom, you see there's a footnote. This footnote is written by Rabbi Yosef Kapach, who lived from 1917 to 2000. He was perhaps the leading, he was a Taimani Jew scholar, and probably the leading scholar of the works of the Rambam in many, many hundreds of years. And he collected and visited many manuscripts of the Rambam in order to try to reconstruct the best version of the Rambam to get it back to the original Rambam based on comparing and contrasting different manuscripts and different things the Rambam wrote. And he published the entire Rambam. And if you see the footnote, it says, Kol halacha zo, this entire halacha, meaning Yud Chet, which is the one above, Leta benidfas, does not appear in the common printed versions of the Rambam. Ve'ita b'chol kitveyad shebershuti, but it does appear in all of the manuscripts in my possession. Uvazeh muvenet halacha yutet. And it's only if we assume, if we include 18, number 18, does number 19 makes, no, on the sheet, halacha, not psukim. Only if we include halacha 18 does halacha 19 make sense. Hamatchelet u'mipnezeh, because it starts with, it's for this reason. But there seems to be no connection. So you have to include the middle halacha. So if you go back now to page 1, we can continue reading it. Halacha 14, the way it's written here, it's really different. This is really halacha 17. They have to have magistrates and judges to judge and warn the people about the six Noahide commandments, and if a non-Jew violates them, they are executed by sword. How is this so? This is the missing halacha. Anyone who worships idols or blasphemed or murdered or had sexual relations with one of those forbidden to him or stole even less than the value of a pruta or ate any amount from a limb or a flesh of a live animal or saw someone else violate one of these fail to judge and execute him is himself executed by means of the sword. So the Rambam lays out each of the seven Noahide laws, and you're obligated if a Noahide breaks them, a non-Jew breaks them, this is the punishment. And then we go back now to the text, umipnei zeh, And because of this, and this gets, now the Rambam discusses our case, umipneze, and because of this, nitchayvu ko ba'alei Shechem hariga. Everyone who lived in Shechem deserved to be executed. Why? Sharei Shechem gazal. Shechem kidnapped. Right? One of the seven Noachide laws, when it says stealing, it means kidnapping. Right? So they kidnapped. They kidnapped Dina. V'ra'u v'yadu v'lo danuhu. And everyone saw it. This is the Rambam's assumption. And did not judge them. Uven Noach neherag be'ed echad uvadin echad b'lo hatra'avi al pi krovin. A non-Jew is executed by the testimony of one with one judge without forewarning and by the testimony of relatives, but not by the testimony of a woman. Okay? And you see other editions are missing the words, but not by the testimony. A woman may not judge for them. We don't need that. So what's the Rambam saying? The Rambam's saying that what happened here, first of all, Shechem broke one of the Sheva Noachide laws by kidnapping Dina. And then everyone else broke one of the Noachide laws because they saw them
and they didn't judge them.
So everybody, says the Rambam,
is guilty
of violating one of the seven Noachide laws. Shechem is violation of kidnapping. Everybody else is in violation of being quiet and not judging. But it doesn't really matter which one is violated. They're all chayav it's a capital crime. And so the Rambam says it's very easy. There's no problem in the story. This story is very straightforward. Everybody's guilty. And so Shimon and Levi were fine. It also answers the question, was Yaakov involved in this? Maybe.
He was quiet.
Maybe he was involved, but he wasn't. It's okay if he was involved because this is fine. And it was okay to trick them because the only way to carry out the judgment was by somehow weakening them so you could carry out the judgment first. And so they did what they had to do. That's a little bit my editorializing that last piece. And at least for Rambam, they're all chayav mita. Rambam wraps it up into a very neat package. That's the Rambam. Okay?
What are the Bnei Noach?
Bnei Noach refer to everyone who's not Jewish.
Why?
That's the term. That's the term.
Wasn't Noach Jewish?
Avi Avraham.
No, Avraham, the Jewish line starts with Avraham. Right? And so everyone in halachic parlance, everyone who's not Jewish, everyone who's not Jewish is a Ben Noach, and obligated in the seven Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach.
Why Noach?
Why they call Bnei Noach? Because he was the model of someone who followed God, but who wasn't
Jewish.
Who wasn't the chosen one to build the Jewish people. Well, everyone is, the whole world is.
And then
there was a split. Right, and then there's a subset, exactly. Right, right. Everyone comes from Noach, that's why. Right, okay, great. That's the Rambam. The Ramban is not impressed. Nachmanides is not impressed with this at all. He quotes the Rambam. If you will start, we'll go backwards a little bit in the Ramban. The Ramban quotes the Rambam. We're on page 3 on the bottom of the page. If you're following along the Hebrew, it is the fourth paragraph, V'harav heshiv b'sefer shoftim. And if you're following the English, it's the last paragraph on the page. And the teacher, Rambam, answered in the book of Judges and said that the children of Noach are commanded about laws and that this and that is that they set up judges in each and every town to judge about their six commandments. And a Gentile who transgresses one of them is killed by the sword. Likewise, if one sees someone who transgresses one of them, that's the Rambam's assumption, right? That all the townspeople knew or saw this going on. That a court did not judge him to kill, behold, this observer should kill him with the sword. And because of this, all the men of Shechem were liable for the death penalty, as behold, Shechem had kidnapped, and they all knew it. And did not judge him. And since they did not enforce civil law, their punishment was death. So first he just quotes the Rambam, and then he says, and these words are not correct in my eyes. He has a very different understanding of how the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach work. As if so, Yaakov, our father, was obligated to be prior and merit to be the instrument of their deaths. And if he was afraid of them, why did he get angry with his sons and curse their anger several times and punish them and divide them and scatter them? Meaning, if they were really guilty, Yaakov should have been the one. Now, Yaakov, we said, it's quiet, he sits back, he lets Shimon, whether he lets or doesn't even know, but Shimon and Levi do all the dirty work. But if they're really guilty of a capital crime, Yaakov should be the one to do it. Did they not merit and do a commandment and trust in God and he rescued them? And to say that Yaakov may have been afraid, well, that may indicate a lack of faith. I think that's a questionable assumption. There's something that could still be a mitzvah and it could still be dangerous, but the Ramban is saying that God would have watched over them had they went ahead and done this. But according to my opinion, the laws that were counted as one of the seven commandments that the children of Noah were commanded is not only to set up judges in each and every town, but rather he commanded them in the laws of theft and fraud, abuse, fair wages, laws of guardianship, rape and seduction, the main categories of damages, injuries to one's fellow, laws of the bar and the lender, laws of purchase and sale and similar to them, like the manner of the laws of Israel was commanded. And he is killed for them if he steals or abuses or rapes or seduces the daughter of his fellow, or if he burnt his hedge and caused injury with it and similar to this. And in the category of this commandment is also that they set up judges in each and every city like Israel. And if they do not do so, they are not killed, as this is a positive commandment. And they only said their warnings is their death penalty.
You lost
so,
me.
Okay, so the Ramban says something. He says the Rambam doesn't understand the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, at least this part of it. Yes, they have to set up courts. And yes, they have to warn everyone about all these proper business practices of borrowing and lending and purchases and sale, just like a Jewish court. But this is a positive commandment, right? This is not do not steal or do not kill or do not eat the flesh of a live animal. This is a positive commandment. Set up a court. And the Ramban says, if you fail to fulfill the positive commandment, that's not a capital offense. A capital offense is only if you break a negative commandment. It says don't kidnap and you kidnap. It says don't eat Avram and Achai, the flesh of a live animal, and you go ahead and cut off the chicken leg while it's still hopping around and eat it. Right? That is a capital offense. But not setting up, right? Not setting up a court, which is a violation or let's say a failure to fulfill a mitzvat aseh, a positive commandment, that's not a capital offense. So if we're setting up a scoreboard of who really deserves to die, according to the Rambam, Maimonides, everybody. Because either they kidnap Dina, or they fail to set up a court, and for the Rambam, failing up to set up a court is a capital offense. So Rambam, the score is 2 plus everybody. I mean, 1 plus everybody. According to the Ramban, who is guilty of a capital offense?
Just the one.
One. Shem. Nobody else. So it's 1 plus everybody versus 1. So now we have a problem, though. Because with the Rambam, it was all a neat package. Everyone's guilty of a capital offense. The only question left over is why didn't Yaakov do it? And we could probably chalk that up to old age. Okay? He doesn't want to go fight. You know, after a while, you're even done with Miluim. Right? After a little while, you don't have to go into reserve duty. You get to stay home with your grandchildren. Right? So Yaakov stayed home. He didn't go and do it. Okay? But when it comes to the Ramban, we still have a lot of questions. Why? How could it be that Yaakov sat back and let this happen? And how can it be that the brothers would do this to begin with? According to the Ramban, only one person is guilty of a capital crime, and they killed the whole city. So we're back to our original question. Now, let's look at the Ramban's answers to the original question. Now back to page 2, to the beginning of the Ramban. Vayanu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem v'et Chamor aviv b'mirma. And the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and his father Chamor with guile. Trickery. Mirma. Behold, Chamor and Shechem spoke to her father and her brothers, but her father did not answer them anything, as his son spoke in his place about this matter out of respect for him. Since the thing was a disgrace for them, they didn't want that he should open his mouth to speak about it at all. They're talking about Yaakov. But what? But Yaakov didn't speak, but he was there. He was there.
When
this whole trick was set up, he was there, which leaves us with a big question about Yaakov, right? How could he allow this? And there is a question here. As it appears that they answered with the agreement of their father and with his counsel, as they were in front of him, and he knew that their answer was spoken with guile. And if so, why did he get angry with Shimon and Levi? So we have two questions. How could Yaakov allow this? And at the end, when it's done, what's Yaakov's reaction?
He's
angry. But he was in the room when the whole plot was hatched.
Excuse
he was in the room. So
his hearing is not the same.
Okay, so you're assuming he didn't hear it, but maybe.
No hearing.
Okay, but he was in the room when they hatched this entire devious plot. So why is he getting angry at the end? So two questions. From the ethical perspective, and just what does the text mean? If we see that he was there and now he's angry. And also, it is not plausible that his will would be to marry his daughter to the Canaanite that defiled her. Third question, did Yaakov really agree that after those people would circumcise themselves, that he would allow his family to intermarry with them? Do we really think that that's what Yaakov is the third in the chain. He knows he has a special responsibility. He's been promised progeny. He's been promised land, right? And now he's going to let just this big, gigantic, mass intermarriage ceremony between his family and them?
Maybe that was what was
the minute they became Jewish,
So you're suggesting that this circumcision
was
a conversion. Okay, maybe, but
why
the Ramban...
Else was he circumcised?
The Ramban... Well, that's the question. The question is, if this wasn't a conversion, what was Yaakov thinking?
Well,
meaning, and from the Ramban's perspective, this was not a conversion. So what was the whole point of going through...
Getting them into pain and getting
But
them
then again, so then, did Yaakov really agree to kill the whole people? Who did nothing, or innocent?
No, I said he shouldn't, because according to if in the laws of those days, by being circumcised, you become Jewish.
Well, No one said that. So that's an assumption. But that's not the assumption that the Ramban is making.
I think it's curious that a whole city full of men, knowing what is coming, would agree to this just to make better the mistake of one man.
Well, they were promised the Israelite daughters.
Oh,
it's going to be one. We're all going to become one. And this was a very, prestigious family,
okay.
And we'll become wealthy because of them. Yeah.
Okay.
It says somewhere that they were promised. No.
Yeah. If they go back, they try to convince them. They go back. If you look quickly, if you go back to, if you go back into the text and you see when the brothers said, when Yaakov and the brothers said, if you circumcise, we'll marry you, then what happens is on 20, Chaf, page 182, Ha'anashim ha'elesh Vayavo Chamor Ushchem Bino El Shar Iram Vayidabru El Anshe Iram Lemor. They come back and say to the whole city, Anashim Ha'elu Shleimim Heimitanu V'yeshvu Ba'aretz V'yischaru Ota. They are peaceful with us. Let them settle in the land and trade with us. For see, there is ample room in the land for them. Let us take their daughters for ourselves and wives and give our daughters to them. Only on this condition. So it's going to be good for everybody. It's a good deal. That's how they convince them. Okay. So we have a lot of questions that the Ramban brings up about this. And finally, And behold, all of the brothers answered with guile, even if Shimon and Levi did the deed, and yet the father only cursed their anger. So these are the Ramban's questions. And the Ramban answers, fascinating theory as to what went on here. Top of page 3. And the answer is, that the guile was in telling them to circumcise all their males, since they thought that the people of the city would not do this. So they first say, this is your question, this seems like an absurd request. This is crazy. You're going to ask, I don't know how many adult males to circumcise themselves. Right? So Yaakov and the sons are thinking, we're going to make an absurd request. They're going to say no, and they'll give us Dina back. Because we're making a deal. You can have Dina if you do this. If not, give her back. And they said, Yaakov's thinking, well, they're never going to do this. They'll give her back. Right? The guile was in telling them to circumcise all their males since they thought that the people of the city would not do this. Meaning, the plan wasn't to kill everybody. The guile was in the question itself. The question itself, Yaakov thought, was a non-starter. They're never going to do this. And if maybe they would listen to their prince and they would all be circumcised, they would come on the third day when they were hurting and they would take their daughter from the house of Shechem. And that's plan B. Plan A is, we're going to ask them to do this ridiculous thing. They're going to say no. They'll give us Dina back. We'll be on our way.
End of that.
End of the story. And if they are crazy enough to go through with this, then on the third day when they're all sitting and kvetching, no, we're just going to go in and get Dina because they're not going to be able to fight.
Oh.
They can't stand up. Michael Abramowitz used to say here, after his bris, he couldn't walk for a year.
What?
Yeah. Right?
Think about it.
Right? So they go in and they say, plan A is they're going to refuse the deal, we'll get Dina back. Plan B is if they go through with this, they're going to be in very bad shape on day 3. We're just going to go in and we'll take Dina. They might not like it, but they're not going to be able to fight us because they are going to be too sick. So the guile, the mirmah here, is these two assumptions. One, they're never going to do it. And two, if they do it, we're going to go in and take Dina. What happened, though? What happened? That's not what happened.
They killed them all.
So what happened? And this was the counsel of all the brothers, and it was with the permission of their father. So the Ramban is first trying to get Yaakov off the hook. Yaakov is off the hook because he never conceived of the possibility of the brothers going in and killing everyone. He never conceived of anyone being killed, even Shechem. Right? Even Shechem, who was guilty, he never envisioned anyone being killed. He envisioned a peaceful or semi-peaceful end to this episode.
He did not envision anything.
It's interesting.
Well, he had a plan. He came up with a plan. But he didn't envision it going so wrong. Yeah.
What about the... She's not mentioned.
You're right. That's a good question.
It's
a good point. And Shimon and Levi. And Shimon and Levi. This is the key to the Ramban's answer. And Shimon and Levi wanted to take revenge upon them and killed all of the men of the city. So the Ramban also wraps up in a nice package. Who only, if you read the Pesukim, who killed everybody? Only Shimon and Levi. It's possible that, probable, that when this whole massacre is going on, Yaakov doesn't even know about it. Yaakov's at home. They send everyone to go get Dina. The brothers go get Dina. They leave. So I'm sort of painting this picture. Shimon and Levi stay behind and start going tent to tent, killing everybody. Yaakov doesn't know about it. The other brothers don't even know about it. So that answers all of our questions. Yaakov was not involved. He was involved in the deceit. And we know Yaakov could be tricky if he needed to be. Right? His whole career started off by tricking his father. Right? So Yaakov was involved in the deceit, but not a deceit that was going to lead to a massacre of a whole city. Right? It was going to at worst lead to a group of ill-advised people circumcising themselves for what would be no reason, Right? But that was self-inflicted and an agreement. Okay.
They promised them to be powerful.
Well, Yaakov never had any intention of that. Right? Yaakov said, here's the deal. We'll marry you and you'll marry us if you circumcise. What? He never thought they would do it. And if they did do it, he was going to take Dina back and they were going to take off. He never had intention of really marrying them. But he also never had any intention, according to the Ramban, of killing anybody. So that gets Yaakov off the hook, and it gets all the brothers off the hook, and the only two who are left with questionable behavior are Shimon and Levi. And then it also makes sense why Yaakov is angry with them. It's true that Yaakov was in the room when this whole plot was hatched, but this is not the plot that Yaakov thought was going to happen. Yaakov was in the room when a different plan was hatched, and Shimon and Levi went off the script.
Oh.
And so Yaakov is angry at them. Now,
Shimon and Levi didn't mention that they are going to kill them all.
Right, this was their own private, rogue move. Yes, Shula.
Two people cannot kill the whole city. I mean,
that's a good question, too. That's a good question, too. But they were ninja style. They went in ninja style, tent by tent, and killed. Remember, they're not shooting with guns, so they're killing everyone with knives or with swords.
Weren't the women around?
Yeah, there are lots of other practical questions about how they were able to actually kill everybody, presuming there were women around who were watching this. But
that's been a village in what they call the city.
It is a very strange mice. And then we continue in the middle of page 3. And it is plausible that Yaakov's anger that cursed them was because they killed the men of the city that had not sinned against him. And what was appropriate for them was that they would kill Shechem only. And this is what the verse states. And the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and his father Hamor with guile, and they spoke since he defiled their sister. Since they all agreed to speak with guile because of the villainy that he did to them, and many will ask, and how is it that the righteous sons of Yaakov did this act to spill innocent blood? But now we've answered the question, because only Shimon and Levi were involved in this, and they went rogue. So there are still more interesting questions. For example, after this is all done, on page 185, Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, Pasuk 30, Pasuk Lamed, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi, 184, 185. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi. Achartem oti lahav isheni biyoshev haaretz baknani uvaprizi v'nimetei mispar v'ne'esvu alai v'hikuni v'nishmadati ani uveti. You have discomposed me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanite and among the Perizzite. I am few in number, and should they band together and attack me, I'll be annihilated, I and my household. So Yaakov is upset. Why?
But he's not upset. Why is he? Because they killed the innocent.
Right. Why is he upset? Why is he upset?
Because they'll come after us.
It sounds right. It still leaves us with a little bit of a lingering question on Yaakov.
That's not enough.
Yaakov does not raise the moral question here. Like, how could you do that? He says two things. He says it's going to ruin my reputation, and maybe they're going to kill me and my whole household, meaning you too, right? But he doesn't raise the moral issue. Now, it could be that in this case, right after the event is taking place, it could be that this is what's on his mind, right? We don't have to judge Yaakov that harshly. This is right after the event. Now he's very nervous. And the reason he's nervous is not because it was immoral. The reason he's nervous is because there's a practical problem that he has to deal with here, which is now he's a marked man. This is like a mafia situation. And now there was a hit against this family. And now there's going to be a counter hit against the other family. And he's just nervous about it. On the other hand, it still does leave the lingering question of, what did Yaakov feel about the moral question? So we have a little bit of a hint to that If we look much later on in the book of Bereshit, when Yaakov is about to die, and he gathers all of the sons around him, and he's giving them brachot. Now,
this is where he
brachot 49:7. 40. That's not five. Page 276.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
This is where he punishes.
He admonishes them. Yeah, he admonishes them. Page tochacha. Page 276. Verse 5. Pasuke. 276. Shimon v'Levi achim. Klei chamas mecherotehem. Shimon and Levi are comrades. Their weaponry is a stolen craft. Bisodam al tavo nafshi, bikahalam al techad kivodi, ki ba'apam hargu ish, urvitsonam ikrushur. Into their conspiracy may my soul not enter. Meaning, I had nothing to do with this. This was an immoral act. I was out of this.
He's cleaning himself.
With their congregation, do not. Oh no! Also, with their congregation, do not join. He's also pushing them a little bit. Oh, my honor! For in their rage they murdered people, and in their whim they hamstrung an ox. Accursed is their rage, for it is intense, and their wrath, for it is harsh. I will separate them within Yaakov, and I will disperse them in Israel. Two ways to read that. What does that mean? I will separate them within Yaakov. Achalkein b'Yaakov, afitzein b'Yisrael. It could mean that I want a little bit of this in all of the tribes. Meaning, they're too much. But we need a little bit of this type of strength and this type of wrath a little bit in, because we don't want to spend the rest of history, if we look at these brachot as Yaakov sort of envisioning ahead, right? We don't want to spend the rest of our history being walked all over, so we need a little bit of the koach, of the anger. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is, no, this has to be diluted, completely diluted. This is bad. This is entirely bad, right? This quick move towards violence is bad, and so I want it to completely diluted. I don't want it anywhere. So this could be either way, this could be Yaakov's raising the morality issue. That finally he's saying, after all these years, what they did was wrong, period, wrong. Because he doesn't at all bring up the danger, or that I was a marked man, and that you made my life miserable after this. He doesn't bring that up. He just brings up the issue that he wants to distance himself from their Hamas, right? From their violence and from their anger. So lots of questions in this episode. Some of them we answered, some of them we didn't. It still leaves us with a little bit of an ambiguous position in terms of how Yaakov actually felt about it once it was done. We may have come to a place where we realize Yaakov was not in on it to begin with, because he had his own idea of how this was going to happen. But once Shimon and Levi did it, unclear exactly how Yaakov felt about it. End of his life, maybe that's where he finally expressed sort of the moral outrage and the danger that exists when anger is unbridled and violence goes unbridled. Okay.